I think, you know, it's twofold. You know, I think that they're working real hard to stay right in the middle of whatever reform comes out and come out more profitable.
It's an investment in their future, and they know that the politicians will pay back many returns. There's any question about it. They'll get their pound of flesh back. They always do. They always have. They always will.
And the only last one thing I wanted to ask you was, well, what do you think, twofold, if you have unemployment at 12 or 13% plus this health care that may fail or turn out to be even worse than what we have now, what do you think of the prospects for 2010 and re-election for Obama? I mean, do you think this is going to be a problem for him?
I'll tell you the truth, and I know some people are going to cringe me saying this. If they don't get this through, if they don't get all of their initiatives through that they want, that they could, and they can, if they play hardball with this, I don't care what happens in 2012 with the administration if they don't fight hard enough for this. They can run over the Republicans if they need to. They should on this issue, and if they don't, they will not have my support.
I'm also looking at the, because it seems like, you know, this would help the economy immensely to extract the profit takers, rent seekers, out of the equation.
Yep.
Now's the time.
That's right. That is right.
But anyway, I'll let you go. Have a nice day.
Thanks for calling, Sandra. Always good to hear from you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. I mean it. I don't say that idly. You don't come before people and ask for their votes and promise them something this important and know that if you play hardball, and if they do it, if the Democrats do get together and play hardball, that they can get their way on this health care bill. There isn't any question about that. Then you should lose the confidence of those voters if you promise that and you don't carry through with it, if it's possible. If it's impossible, that's something else. But this is possible. They are on the precipice of being able to do this. Yes, they'd have to play some political hardball. Yes, they'd piss a lot of people off. But do it. Do it. It is worth doing politically. Evidently, they figured it is not. But we'll see. We'll see who's got the guts and who doesn't. We'll see who keeps their promises and who doesn't. I'll be sorely disappointed in our new president, a man who I've wholeheartedly supported, if he doesn't get a good, meaningful health care program through. I won't accept any excuses on it as a voter. I will not accept any excuse for not getting a good health care bill through. There can be no excuse for that. None. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back, and we'll have Bob Amsterdam, noted international lawyer, with us when we come back. We're going to talk a little bit about Hugo Chavez. Don't go away.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Canada's National Union of Public and General Workers wants Americans to know that lies are being spread about what a public option health care reform plan in the U.S. would do. Union spokesman Mike Luff says that one lie that's repeated often in TV ads in the U.S. is that the government would suddenly take over health care decisions in a public option plan. Those ads call that a Canadian-style system.
All decisions about treatment and care are between a patient and a doctor. The government has no role to play in terms of who our doctors are or what treatment we receive. So these outright lies you hear about government bureaucrats controlling the system just aren't true. They're lies.
Luff says a government-run single-payer healthcare system in Canada has produced a population that's healthier and lives longer than we do in the U.S. He says several Royal Commission reports have concluded the government-run system delivers the best health care. So Americans have nothing to fear from a public option, Canadian-style system.
Our system is tied to our understanding of citizenship. It's not just a social program for us. Most Canadians see it as a birthright, and it's a reflection of who we are and what we value.
Garbage collection could soon resume in Toronto after a month-long strike. Jesse Russell reports.
More than a month ago, Toronto city workers walked off the job, leading to weeks without garbage collection. Now those workers could soon be heading back to work, as the union representing the nearly 6,200 outdoor workers in the city has reached an agreement with negotiators. The workers must now vote on the contract, and if it is approved, the earliest they will likely be back on the job is Thursday. During the strike, the city set up temporary garbage sites in public parks. Also announcing an agreement on Monday was the union representing 18,000 indoor city workers who handle work ranging from permitting to city-run daycare centers. The agreements come on the 36th day of the strike in Toronto. Last Thursday, municipal workers in the Canadian city of Windsor also came to an agreement that ended a 101-day strike that saw the cessation of garbage collection. Here is today's economic report. Obesity likely increases medical spending. According to a study published in the journal Health Affairs, an obese person spends on average $1,400 more a year on medical needs than someone who is not obese. According to the study, obesity-related conditions account for 9.1% of all medical spending. One example of cost is diabetes, because excess weight is a leading contributor to the disease. In the United States, $190 billion per year is spent for treating diabetes.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you're getting me! Here's my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You got them.
Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James here with you. Welcome to the show, and thanks for staying with us through the news. Always good to know we've got a great audience waiting out there every time we're on. Thank you. Thank you very much for being with us today. We've got an interview coming up very shortly. Our guest is going to be Bob Amsterdam. Bob is an internationally recognized attorney who is very concerned, more concerned than most, because he probably has more knowledge about it than most, about the rise of power of Hugo Chavez and some of the things that's happening in his country right now. And we'll be talking about that, about the lack of freedom of press and oppression that's leading to, well, leading to some pretty tough rulings by Mr. Chavez on people's human rights. 866-546-5254. I guess I would ask you to hold off on your calls right now. We'll be getting our guest on the phone here in just a moment or two. I did want to mention about our health care and the lies that you hear every day that the Republicans are putting out there, and some Democrats as well, outright damnable lies about the Canadian health care system. Here's a letter from somebody in Canada. I live in a country amongst people who are very much like you. As far as health care goes, I never take my wallet when I go to my doctor, whom I chose, and when I chose to have a different one, no problem, nor to the hospital, nor to the walk-in clinic. There is no middleman. I can't even fathom having someone in a corporation somewhere having any say as to my personal health care. In my 58 years, I've had numerous procedures, tests, surgeries, physicals, and even treatment for lymphoma. I have never experienced an unreasonable wait time. I have always had the best of care by doctors and nurses in the best and most up-to-date hospitals. And when I was diagnosed with lymphoma just 2 years ago, I had consultations, tests, and therapy all within 2 months of said diagnosis. Yes, all done within 2 months, and luckily clear to this day. My experience is not unusual. It is the norm here. Tell me about the stories you hear. Use your head. Anyone, anywhere can come up with exceptions to any rule. We're dealing with humans. Never will there be perfection. There will always be some dissatisfied people. But the distance between what I have available to me here and what you put up with is extreme. And even now, you are being denied the option of even talking about a system that has been working here for generations. Tommy Douglas was the founder of our healthcare system. He, of course, met with great opposition when he put his ideas forward decades ago. Well, Tommy Douglas, in this decade, has been declared the greatest Canadian by the people of Canada. Yes, he beat out Wayne Gretzky, he beat out Terry Fox, Pierre Trudeau, and Alexander Graham Bell. The main reason, his introduction of our health care system. I write all of this because I'm so sad that one of the great countries doesn't have what is so within their power to institute, and that is to look after their own people for their most basic needs. I fear it will never happen. Thanks for listening, Linda, a Canadian. Well, all right. That about says it all. I'm going to see if we can get a hold right now of our guest. Let's make a try here and see what happens. Do the old ringy-dingy deal. Only I'm not hearing it. Here we go.
Hello.
Hi, is this Robert Amsterdam?
It is indeed.
Well, hello. This is Guy James from the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. How are you?
Good to have you on the program today. You ready to go live?
I am.
All right, let's do it. We have with us Mr. Robert Amsterdam, internationally known attorney. He's been involved in cases pretty much all over the world, more than anyone I know, anyway. If you'd read Bob's resume, you would be most impressed, I'm sure. Bob, the reason we ask you to come on the program today, I know you have a great interest in what's going on in Venezuela and in that area of the world, and there are some very disconcerting things happening there with Mr. Hugo Chavez, and would you care to tell us what you're so concerned about there?
Sure, guys. Thank you for having me. One of the major issues we've seen, obviously, is this Honduran situation. And, you know, it's interesting. Watching Zelaya since he was taken out of office is really an object lesson in how Mr. Chavez works. Because rather than supporting the conciliation going on in Costa Rica in an attempt to bring the Honduran people together to get past this crisis, Chavez and Zelaya are running a three-ring circus, trying to get media attention, trying to divide the populace of Honduras, trying to spark some form of dangerous manifestation. And, you know, it simply underscores the kind of game Chavez is playing in the entire region. He's formed this ALBA organization, this Bolivarian organization of countries, to basically act not only in an independent manner, which obviously no one can challenge, but in a way that simply identifies themselves as operating contrary to what they view as U.S. interests. And certainly when you talk about energy, Mr. Chavez, just as we speak here today, is outside of celebrating his birthday. He is being entertained by one of Russia's most important leaders, Igor Sechin, and Mr. Sechin is perhaps more important than even the president, Mr. Medvedev. He is the energy czar, and he was pictured standing on a platform that had been built by ConocoPhillips and in many ways stolen from that company and handed over to the Russians. And I thought to myself, you know, Venezuela, they have purchased over $5 billion in Russian arms, more arms than Colombia has ever seen from the United States. And I wonder how many Americans really understand the kind of tremendous, not only military hardware, but energy firepower that Mr. Chavez has tried to line up in order to really destabilize the region and broaden his power base.
Well, certainly, and you mentioned ALBA. Can you tell us everybody that's involved in that, in the area?
Well, you would start with, obviously, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Ecuador. And then you would also go to some of the Caribbean islands, which have... It does. Though I'm very careful. I never really... You know, I don't compare cases because that sort of it doesn't give either client the benefit of, you know, the unique circumstances in each country and in each case. But certainly the kind of situation we've seen with Cedeño is not what normally people would associate with 21st century Latin America. It's fairly shocking, and it should concern all of us. And you know, Guy, one of the things I'll say, and I see this in the internet all the time, that Americans keep saying, well, you know, we've got our own problems, we've got all, you know, Guantanamo, we've got our economy, which, you know, I can tell you I certainly understand, but we need to realize that when you talk about the security of the United States, having a country as a neighbor like Venezuela, representing the unmeasured security risks of having a guy like Chavez who is close to Ahmadinejad and working with, not only the Russians and the Chinese, but the Iranians, you really do have to ask yourself what the United States can do to mitigate some of those risks, and that's why I've become, you know, something of a proponent of pushing our government to work much harder on closer ties with Brazil, with Argentina, with some of the other key players like Chile in the region that are such positive forces for good. It doesn't matter whether they've got leftist governments or what types of governments they have. We need to reach out to them, and, you know, we certainly have the right guy in the White House to sort of raise the level of soft power of the United States.
Well, I have to ask the question then, and how much of a threat is he to the United States? Militarily, of course, he would not try anything against this country, would he?
No, it's not what he would do. You know, I'm not saying in any way that they're planning to invade.
No,
in fact, it was quite laughable when he used to suggest that the United States would invade Venezuela. I think what we're talking about is the kind of risk he represents to the region from, throwing his money at various elections, interfering in the internal affairs of any of these countries, and working very hard to set up something like a gas OPEC to use natural gas as well as oil as a foreign policy tool, and to change the very context of the region and to work actively against our interests in the region. I think that's really what we're talking about, far more than any military threat. On the military side, the issue that's significant is the Iranian situation and the issue of, safety is a major issue when you've got these allegations in respect to Hezbollah, the recent allegations of the U.S. government in respect to Chavez's inability to control, in fact, what seems to be his unwillingness to deal with the drug trafficking situation in this country, the allegations that he is close to the FARC, in fact, that he's been supporting the FARC. This is pretty serious stuff.
Well, it is serious stuff when you consider that, okay, we've got Venezuela. They have some sway with the Iranians. There's oil there. There's oil in the Russians. They're antagonistic towards us right now. We're talking about kind of a pattern developing here. Many of these countries that have a lot of oil products not all that friendly with us right now. And down the road, what happens, you know?
Well, and in fact, many of them, like the Russians, spending millions and millions of dollars on anti-American propaganda and working so intensively to use anti-Americanism as a core strand of their very governance, of their identification of their own people as being anti-American. It's an amazing development and extension of, you know, some of the worst things that we felt after the Vietnam War. But now, in fact, it's after the last 8 years of the Bush administration, it's become a lot worse.
Well, how badly has the rule of law in Venezuela actually deteriorated? How bad is it? How close is he to being an absolute dictator and just throwing the law out the window?
He's pretty damn close, frankly. And let's be clear, Venezuelan law was no pristine jewel before Chavez took power. There was tremendous corruption in the courts that existed. The difference is, and I guess I see this more as a practitioner than many people do who are academics, there's a big difference between corruption that involves 1,000 hands that are out, all sorts of press, all sorts of means of controlling it, and a situation where the corruption is political as well as financial, and where there is no... there's not 1,000 different hands out. There's one controlling hand of the state. that becomes far more dangerous, far more oppressive, and far more difficult to contend with. And that's the situation, and that's what the white paper has documented. I mean, to the point that we had testimony, and now it's actually on the web. She's interviewed just a few days ago on television. We had testimony from a Judge Lopez who's when she gave an order that was essentially in the interest of Cedeno, she was threatened with the loss of her son, who had almost been taken from the school by Chavez sympathizers to put pressure on her in respect to the Cedeno case. I mean, that's the level to which these people are prepared to go.
Well, that goes back to a question I asked earlier, and I don't think we got to. You are an American citizen. You go to a place and work on behalf of somebody that that government is hostile towards. They're hostile towards you. How do you, as an American lawyer, walk into a situation like that and be guaranteed safety and that you will be able to practice your trade there in any meaningful way? How do you get away with that?
Well, firstly, I am in the company of very brave and heroic Venezuelan lawyers. And while I'm an American citizen and a Canadian citizen, I practice Canadian, not American law, not Venezuelan law. Though I have to admit, in an earlier case, I actually showed up in a Venezuelan court. But what we do, and we do it on behalf of corporations, and we do it on behalf of individuals, is when a country behaves contrary to the rule of law, when they hold trials that are political and not legal, when they throw people in jail with a motive that has nothing to do with law, we take on these political cases and we fight them, not only working with the lawyers in court, but working with the politicians, working with the media, to shine a light on these outrages. I mean, we did that in Russia till I was arrested. We do that in six or seven countries right now that we've got cases in. And quite frankly, I have the protection of, a U.S. passport and a Canadian passport. And what concerns me is my colleagues in each of these countries who are role players who don't have the protection of those foreign passports, and to have to deal with this situation. I have lived through the Kordakowski trial. I had a dinner a few years ago in Moscow with a lovely reporter that I worked with in that case named Anna Politkovskaya. And I had dinner with her and a lawyer she wanted me to meet named Stanislav Markelov. This was in 2005. Both of those individuals are dead today. Both shot separately in separate political killings in Russia. I was involved in helping to establish an award in the name of that journalist. And the first recipient of that award, the Politkovskaya Award, has just been murdered in Chechnya. You do say to yourself, how many of these incredibly brave people have to be murdered before we stop treating people like Putin as if they are just, a normal governing group? You know, your listeners would not know this, but there was a major mobster in Russia who was put in jail in 2008. This man is known to have the most incredible economic and political connections, covering all sorts of energy companies. This guy was just released. It's absolutely shocking how completely morally, politically, and legally corrupt the junta is in Moscow. And we continue to have people talk about that group as if they are a normal government, giving them this presumption of regularity and comparing their conduct to that of the U.S. government or some other government that adheres to the rule of law.
Absolutely incredible. Bob, I don't want to get real personal here, but when you go into a situation like that, when you go to a lawless country like Venezuela, do you take people with you to help protect you?
It depends on the country. In some countries, I have a case in Nigeria. I won't really take anybody. I certainly won't take anybody on the ground there. I might bring somebody with me because I often find that local bodyguards are more dangerous than having no bodyguards at all. In Russia, when I was defending Kurkovsky, I had no bodyguards because I knew very well that if I was going to get taken out, it was going to be by the government and not by the not by someone on the street.
Wow. And are you still involved in the case in the Philippines?
No, I'm not involved in the case in the Philippines.
Okay. Well, you certainly get around. How do you give us a little background, Bob? How did you get involved in the case with Cedeño, for example?
Well, the Cedeño folks had run into me at a congress, a legal or political congress in Prague last year, and we had a long chat, and they asked me to come and meet the client last fall, which I did. And I was retained in that case after this individual had been in jail for 2 years.
Well, you certainly run into some interesting people. I think I recall you talking about. Was I off base when I said you were involved in a case in the Philippines? Hadn't you been involved?
I think you were thinking about Singapore.
Singapore, yes, and you just happened to bump into somebody in that case that said he doesn't have an attorney, and you said, well, he does now.
I that's right. He was the lone protester in front of the presidential palace in Singapore, or the official residence. He had about 40 cameras facing him and a bunch of vicious-looking military cops with batons, and this man was all alone. And I was in Singapore to speak about human rights, and I just couldn't fathom the courage of this man. This guy's name is Dr. Chi, and if you go to my website, you'll see a link to him and his case and his political party. You know, he's just an incredibly brave guy taking on the entire system in Singapore.
Well, you're not exactly a shrinking violet yourself. Bob, thanks so much for being on the program today. I hope to have you back again soon. You're involved in some fascinating cases, and you're a great authority on what's going on politically around the world. I'd love to sit and have one of those four-hour dinners with you just pick your brain, because I know you've got some fascinating stories to tell.
Well, thanks so much, Ben.
Your website again, please?
It's www.robertamsterdam.com.
Easy enough. And, Bob, thanks so much for being on the program. It's a joy to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ben. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy.
Yes.
On live?
Yes, you are.
This is Mark in Indiana. Uh-huh. First time I've called you, but we've corresponded.
Yes.
I have to talk about your guest, Mr. Amsterdam. I heard him interviewed on Bob's show, and there's something about the guy that just bothers me. He impresses me as like a plant from the American Enterprise Institute or something like that. Especially when he talks about Honduras. He never talks about the fact that Honduras is, for all intents and purposes, a United States military base. That 100 of the officers that pulled off that coup down there are all graduates of the School of the Americas. And it seems to be all about the big old American oil companies, too. I'm sure Chavez has his warts, but there's something that, about this guy that's just rubbing me the wrong way.
Well,
I really think... Pardon?
Yeah, if I find out what it is, I'll let you know. I so far have found him to be very forthright and honest with me in several conversations with him. I met with him in Washington the last time I was there.
Oh, he seems to be intelligent, but it's all the buttons he pushes. You know, first he starts talking about the Russians are coming, and then, oh, my God, it's the Iranians that are coming to get us, and they're all in league with these South American lefties, and it's an old playbook that goes back to dropping nuns out of helicopters in El Salvador and everything else that the School of Americas has done down there, all the atrocities. The airport that they flew Zelaya out of is a U.S. military base. They control the tower. So, I mean, that ought to tell us something. Yeah, like I said, I'm sure Chavez has his warts, but the biggest thing is that he nationalized the oil, and that PO'd a lot of big companies, big American companies.
Oh, yeah.
And Canadian companies, too, I might add.
Certainly did. Yeah.
You know, and fact is, the oil's under his dirt, so... and the other truth of the thing is, you know, every leftist leader that's gotten in South America in the last century has been cooed out, wiped out, assassinated. Just read up on the School of the Americas. I think you know about them.
Well, you know, there's a group there that would have been better if they'd have never, never been formed, never had any recognition whatsoever. School of the Americas, you know, it's funny you bring that up, Mike. I was reading a little bit about them the other day. There's probably not a more vile group, and some of the things that they've done, they're as bad as any group that they're terrible. I mean, they've been involved in some
horrible things. Well, and then the latest accusation is, Chavez is into drug dealing. Where have we heard that one before?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, and torture. And trial without, or detention without trial, that isn't the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Somebody we know real well has been involved in things like that.
Sure.
My, oh, my. Yeah.
Well, I just had to get that off my chest. I really feel like the guy's kind of a subterfuge, getting on the most liberal venues he can find. And, I have not heard him on any of the other so-called liberal intelligentsia either. Maybe they don't want to touch him, you know?
Could be.
But I did hear him first the other night on Bob's show. It was an honest interview. Nothing against you, that's for sure.
Where are you at in Indiana, Mike?
Just north of Indianapolis. I used to live on a farm here. We've talked before. I was going to move down there to Fort Myers last fall. Had to go to the hospital, so still stuck in Indiana.
Well, you could be
maybe next year.
You could be stuck in worse places, my friend. Hey, thanks for calling, Mike. It's good to hear your views.
It's Mark. And
Mark, I'm sorry.
And like I said, first time I called, but it just stuck in my craw.
Well, we respect your views, and I'm glad to hear them. Thanks so much for calling.
Have a good evening.
Well, there you go. What do you think? That's Mark from Indiana, just north of Indianapolis. Yes, we have corresponded back and forth, and he was thinking about moving to Florida and called and asked Mary, wrote and asked about housing conditions and all that sort of thing here. If you want to buy a house, this is the place to come and buy it right now. You can buy them pretty cheap, let me tell you. Some of you that live, let's say, in Indiana and Ohio and across the Midwest there, the great grain belt and then Illinois, and you've seen property values go down. And of course, you didn't see them go up like crazy like they did here either. Literally here, in a matter of 10 years, property values tripled. And now in a matter of about 3 years, man, crash and burn, let me tell you. So a lot of you have not experienced the type of Johnny O. I see Johnny O's on the chat room today. Johnny O, back me up on this. A lot of you have not experienced around the country the terrible, terrible drop in real estate prices that has happened here. We still have our local newspaper filled almost every day in the back pages of foreclosures. It's incredible. They're running thousands of them through the court, and I'm not kidding, thousands. It's an amazing situation. You can drive down some places not too far from where I'm sitting right now and find, you know, six, seven, eight homes in a row, all been foreclosed upon. It's a very, very sad situation. So many people have gotten... And I want to ask you about this. I want to ask your opinion, and I want to ask if some of you have had the same thing happen to you. I have a credit card with a company that I have had for a long time, and maybe I've brought this up to you before, but I've had it for a long time and always paid the bill on time, sometimes run a little balance, sometimes not. As it so happens, right now there is a balance on it of several hundred dollars. And I get my statement, and my interest has tripled. It's gone more than tripled. It's gone from 7.25% to 22.9%. Yes. No delinquency. No, nothing arrear, nothing out of order whatsoever, and absolutely perfect, perfect payment record. And they triple the interest. Well, I called them, just like you see on TV, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to do this. And the lady on the other end laughed and said, what do you mean you're not going to do it? I said, I'm not going to pay you. Well, yes, you are. No. No, really, I'm not, because now you're getting into, you're getting into mob-type interest rates, and I've heard of worse ones than this. I've heard people had them go up to like 31% that was late or something. I said, what have I done to deserve this? I said, well, you haven't done anything. It's just that there's a change in conditions, and we've company-wide sent out millions of notices of people that their interest rates are going to be changed. And I said, from 7.25 to 22.99? And they said, well, they sent me a letter. Well, I didn't get any letter. And that's the crux of the matter right now. I got no letter. I can't prove I didn't get it. They can't prove I did get it. And they're saying that since they notified it, that legally, that they can raise it from 7.25 up to 22.99. Well, I am not going to pay it. They've called me half dozen times and asked me when I'm going to pay it, and I've told them half dozen times I'm not going to pay it. I said, well, they couldn't leave the interest rate where it was. And I said, No, here's the thing. We're dealing in semantics here. It's not that you can't. It's that you won't. Somewhere in the food chain in your organization, there is somebody that can say, hey, let's be fair here. Let's not triple the interest on somebody that's always been good with us. But they don't seem to be, don't seem to want to agree with me. So finally, I just told them, I think it was Saturday, they called me on my cell phone and asked me what I was going to do, and I said, here's my final offer. You either take that back to the interest rate that it was at the 7.25%, or I'm not going to pay you. Not a dime, ever, again. And you know what? There's no way that you can collect it. I live in Florida. You can't take my house. There's nothing you can do. And I would explain all the circumstances that to you. And he said, well, we can ruin your credit. And I said, hey, I'm old enough, I don't really care. I don't use credit very much anyway. So I tell you, I wonder if a whole bunch of us got together and said, hell no, we're not going to put up with this anymore. I don't know. Anyway, I wonder if any of you have had similar experiences. I would like to know if you have. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a break. And I did have something I wanted to play for you here. Oh, William Shatner took Sarah Palin's little speech the other day and put it to a poem on Conan O'Brien's show, and I've got that for you here. It's short. I love what Shatner did with this.
Soaring through nature's finest snow. Denali, the great one, soaring under the midnight sun. And then the extremes in the wintertime. It's the frozen road that is competing with all of its ice-fogged, frigid beauty. The cold, though, doesn't it split the chichacos from the sourdoughs? And then in the summertime, such extremes. Summertime, about 150 degrees hotter than just some months ago, and then just some months from now. With fireweed blooming along the frost heaves and merciless rivers that are rushing and carving and reminding us that here Mother Nature wins, and it is, as throughout all Alaska, that big, wild, good life teeming along the road that is north to the future.
Please.
for joining us here on the Guy James Show. Poor, poor, pitiful me. Yeah, that's me right now, I guess. Just a word to Sophie on the chat room. Sophie, evidently you've never seen me dance. I'll just leave it at that. Private joke between Sophie and me. Gosh, time is flying away today. How do you feel about this birther issue? I was looking at a birth certificate today, and it faxed to me. August 4th, 1961, 7:24 p.m. on the island of Oahu. Barack Hussein Obama. Mother, father, all listed. An official birth certificate. I know a guy who is closely associated with Lou Dobbs. I've met him at the Democratic National Convention. We stayed at the same bed and breakfast together, had breakfast together, hauled him around to and from the convention hall, got to know him pretty well. And he's very closely associated with Lou Dobbs. In fact, he fills in for him now and then. And he's happy to have the chance to work with Dobbs because of the money involved. But I got from the conversation, and he wouldn't like me saying this, but hell, he's the right winger. What do I care? I like the guy, really. That Dobbs goes off half-cocked some of the time. That he will run with a story given to him by a nutcase and swear that he has the facts. And this birther thing is absolutely nuts. Just nuts. I tell you. And it goes on and on and on. Did you see the video of the guy, I can't think of his name, going through the Capitol building and all that, and trying to interview some of the Republicans about whether or not they thought Barack Obama was legitimate because of his birth certificate and all, and how so many of them completely avoided, they didn't want to say. They knew they'd look completely stupid if they said, no, he's not legit, but then again, they knew that they'd have the ire of the wacko right-wing Republicans if they said he was legit. And so they tried to run from these guys. I don't know who started this birther thing, but it's crazy what it is, and it's so crazy. It's so crazy that now Rush Limbaugh has run from it. In a little article from Media Matters, the CNN host has permanently tarnished his reputation. The birther movement is officially kaput. Rush Limbaugh is afraid to talk about the birthers, and that's a win-win situation. Rush Limbaugh won't talk about it now because he's seen what's happened toward Dobbs. And you have to admit, Dobbs has been getting nuttier and nuttier all the time. He's a one-trick pony. The only thing he seems to know about is illegal immigration, and he's made that his personal his personal cause, and I'm so tired of it. That's all he wants to know about. And here's a guy that had illegals helping train his horses that his daughter rides in horse competition, and he had illegals working for him with her horses. So, and yes, I believe Dobbs' wife is Mexican. It's just crazy. Just absolutely crazy. And I hope they keep it up. I do hope they keep it up. If I can get a hold of that birth certificate, you can get a hold of that birth certificate. Anybody can get a hold of that birth certificate. and all you got to do is check. And yet these guys get on and swear something is gospel when they know that it isn't. They'll do that. That's one thing I promise you we've never done on the show. Even if somebody gives me some information that I think is suspect, or someplace where I have good informants from Capitol Hill, for example, if they give me a story that's a little bit crazy, I go around and check it out. And if it's too crazy, I don't talk about it. It's a little bit crazy. I'll tell you about it and say, hey, I don't know the facts on this, so don't take it for gospel. You know that's what we do. But to get on a program night after night like Lou Dobbs does, and let's face it, Lou Dobbs is an ass. I only know and have spoken to maybe four people that know him, and all of them have said he's pretty much an ass. So you can take it from there. I don't know. Oh, I love Lauder J's chat room. Dobbs doesn't have anything that can't be cured with a small ball peen hammer applied repeatedly to the temples. Good. Very, very good. I think that would calm all of his ills. Hey, listen, I do want to have a serious talk just for a moment. We've been out and about scouting what we can do to keep the show going. We've had a family medical emergency, all that. We have tried mightily to keep the program going, and I hope you'll help us do that. It's not free, and we do need your help right now. I'm very, very serious about that if we're going to continue doing this. So theguyjamesshow.com, if you can help out, I hope you will. That's theguyjamesshow.com. So if you can, I hope you do. Hope you will. We do need the participation by the audience right now and to help pay for the show. Anyway, that's all we have today. I hope to see you back here tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow. Hope you will be as well. Thanks for listening. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life you give me is my creation. Ah!
this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let's go.
Right now.
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. See if I can get those music guys to stop. They're a little enthusiastic today. Welcome. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area, and all points in between there, and maybe a little bit east and west out into the Gulf if you're out into the Gulf fishing this afternoon. Why, join in. I don't know how many guys listen to the radio while they're fishing. I really don't. But anyway, there's some of them out there. Interesting today, what we're going to do, our first hour is going to go along as usual. We're going to have a good guest with us. We have Representative Allison Schwartz from the 13th District of Pennsylvania over Philadelphia way, and we're going to talk about health care. We're going to talk about health care quite a bit the first hour today. And then the second hour, due to the fact that there's construction going on next door, and they tell me there's going to be loud construction starting at 4 o'clock. They were nice enough to warn me. Too loud, in fact. They're going to be using hammer drills on a cement building, and the noise, I'm afraid, will resonate throughout this building, and it'll be too loud for us to use our microphones. So we're going to have a talk by Jonathan Alter, an audio by Jonathan Alter, talking about his terrific book, Franklin Roosevelt, The Defining Moment, and it is a terrific book. So we'll have that on for you in the second hour. In the first hour, we'll talk a lot about health care. Health care, I want to know, how many of you have any hope for a meaningful health care bill? I want you to know right now, I don't. I think there is, the chances are slim and none of coming up with a good health care bill. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I think all of our politicians have been bought off. Not all of them, but a goodly number of them are bought off. And we're not going to see it happen. Just not going to happen this time around. Maybe never. And I would like to let you know also, I've got a million things going on here in the studio. Got about four computers running and a little something going on in every one of them. Keep in mind from this. This scare tactic has been going on for how long from the Republicans? Folks over at Think Progress today reminded me that tomorrow is the 44th anniversary of Medicare. 44th. And it is an essential government-sponsored health care program that provides coverage to virtually all of the nation's elderly and a large share of people with disabilities. And I don't think I have to tell you that Medicare has been a resounding success. There's no other way you can say it. A resounding success. And again from Think Progress, it says, at the time of its creation, of course, I added the of course, conservatives strongly opposed Medicare, warning that a government-run program would lead to socialism in America. And who was out there leading the charge on that? None other than St. Ronnie of Reagan. Yes, socialism in America. And his own words, if you don't stop Medicare and I don't do it, one of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years, well, Ronnie has already spent his sunset years, telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free. Now, can't you see Ronnie, St. Ronnie of Reagan, having Michael and Ron Jr. before he went on to his reward, whatever it may be, telling them, yes, this is what it was like back when we were still free, before that Medicare came along and ruined these United States. George H.W. Bush described Medicare in 1964 as socialized medicine. Get that word in there, socialized. Barry Goldwater, let me quote him, having given our pensioners their medical care in kind, why not food baskets? Why not public housing accommodations? Why not vacation resorts? Why not a ration of cigarettes for those who smoke and of beer for those who drink? Barry Goldwater. And Bob Dole. What a group of intelligent men we've got here. Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Barry Goldwater, and Bob Dole. Goldwater probably the smartest of the bunch, but was not above using scare tactics. Bob Dole said, 1996. Now, mind you, this is after Medicare has been in business for, what, 31 years? While running for the presidency, Dole openly bragged that he was one of 12 House members who voted against creating Medicare in 1965. He said, I was there, fighting the fight, voting against Medicare, because I knew it wouldn't work back in 1965. He knew it wouldn't work. Bob Dole's an idiot. George H.W. Bush is an idiot. Ronald Reagan was an idiot. Sorry, folks. Sorry for those of you that want marble statues of Ronald Reagan put on every street corner. I'm sorry to all of you who want every school in the nation, every college, every federal building named for Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a political idiot. Ronald Reagan was a Class B actor. Ronald Reagan was a guy who was a good communicator, I will give you that. But he was an actor, you see. An actor. A guy that read some lines and then mimicked them. Then, you know, I don't know what the big deal is about acting. Acting is, well, I'll just say it. I've done a lot of it in little theater. It's easy. You just have to go and pretend like you are somebody else or that you know something that you don't actually know. You use other people's words, other people's deeds, other people's actions. But Ronald Reagan was a political... Well. And so here we have the Republicans recycling the same fear-mongering rhetoric today in an effort to defeat the public option. And I know some of you are aware of Igor Volsky. He notes on the Wonk Room, conservatives have attempted in the decades since Medicare's creation to kill it and force it to wither on the vine. And while Medicare is not without its problems, And I would caution everybody to say that no program is perfect. It has dramatically improved access to health care, and it has allowed seniors to live longer, allowed them to live healthier, and it's helped greatly reduce poverty amongst the elderly. And it's contributed to the desegregation of Southern hospitals, and it has become one of the most popular government programs. You would find very few people that would voice serious opposition to Medicare these days. Even this afternoon on MSNBC, Representative Mike Pence, and damn it, I'm getting tired of seeing his face on TV. He's explained his opposition to a new public health care option by arguing that Medicare spending has exceeded actuarial estimates from 1965. And as Andrea Mitchell pointed out somewhat jokingly, she said, I don't know if you want to go back to Indiana and campaign against Medicare. Oh, no, I support Medicare, Pence responded. So the fools are out in force, and they're going to beat this health care thing to death. And they will fear-monger it as much as they possibly can. And you're going to hear more crap in the next month or two, or however long to get anything done, long it takes to get anything done on the Medicare or on the health care issue. I want to tell you right here and now, and I'll stake my reputation on this, you will not see a health care benefit bill pass that's worth squat. Maybe for a tiny minority of the people, you'll see something pass. That I'll guarantee you. What it's worth, it won't be worth a bucket of spit. I promise you that. We're going to have the best health care bill a lobbyist can buy. And I would remind everybody of this. Another 14,000 Americans lost their health insurance today. How many members of Congress do you suppose lost their health care today? I think you know the answer to that. And averaging out what Senator Max Baucus takes from the health care industry when they stuff his pockets full of campaign money, he made another $1,500 in bribes from the healthcare industry today. So once again, the score is fat cats, quite a lot. You and me, zip. You know, news that Senator Max Baucus' Finance Committee deal on health care financing excluded a public option. Get this. The word is out that the Finance Committee has left out a public option, which that fact in and of itself declares this whole thing null and void as far as I'm concerned. Left out the public option, and what happened? The insurance, the health insurance stocks went wild today. That's right. Shares of U.S. health insurers rose broadly on Tuesday on hopes a health reform bill would not include a government-run option. The S&P Managed Healthcare Index of large U.S. health insurers closed 6.5% higher yesterday. Aetna rose 12.6% in one day, mind you. Not bad, huh? Wonder if Max has any stock in Aetna. Coventry was up 12.7%. Cigna, 7.7 to the good. All of them on the New York Stock Exchange. Centene rose 7.9%. The health insurance executives who have literally poured money into the campaign coffers of Blue Dogs, Max Baucus, Chuck Grassley, Kent Conrad, Joe Lieberman, and Susan Collins, along with their political action committees. The people that spent the money on these guys likely made every dime of it back in one day because of the rise of stock prices. That is what this all is all about. They spent millions and millions of dollars fighting a public option in this health care bill, and they got it all back yesterday. All of it. Not a bad investment, do you think? You don't have to wonder whether Wall Street thinks Max Baucus' deal is great news for the health insurance industry status quo, because numbers like these that I just mentioned don't lie. Let's be perfectly clear here, and I don't care what politician knows it, and I will mention it today to our guest. Let's be absolutely clear how we feel about it, how I feel about it anyway. That health care bill coming out of the Max Baucus Committee will be the best bipartisan bill that lobbyist money bought. Hopefully the rest of America's interest can be reconciled with it once Baucus and his five greedy friends get their hands off of it. But never mind that, it's not going to happen. They're starting to pass the word. I heard Laura Ingraham, I've heard others now say that Democrats are going to start finding ways to kill old people so that we don't have to pay their health care bills. Maybe they're suggesting that we're going to round them up in railroad cars and ship them off to the deserts of Arizona and New Mexico in some sort of concentration camp. Maybe it would be like that movie, Soylent Green. People just come up missing. When you're old and you start needing medical care, the Democrats are going to come for you in the middle of the night and haul you away so that they can save on health care bills. That's what they're going to do. The Democrats are going to kill you, old folks. They're going to neglect you. They're going to take your Medicare away. They're going to take everything away from you. Oh, and they'll tax you while they're doing it. You get a cup of gruel every day until you can no longer function, and then, you know, there are those ovens waiting. That's what they would have you believe. They're starting to advertise that now. They're starting to play on the fears of the elderly in this country and tell them that the Democrats are going to put you down the hospice chute. Look, a single-payer plan is only politically possible if you and I demand it. We can stand out here and shuffle our feet and say, oh, well, just pass something. But that's what's got us in all these messes in the first place. And if all that talk of change meant anything, if it meant anything at all, it should mean that we stop doing that. That we stop standing by idly and letting these politicians get away with this kind of deception and downright thievery. Don't get on the bandwagon to pass any more stupid bills. They're trying to sucker every man, woman, every voter in America into going along with, well, we'll do these co-ops, you know. Ken Conrad has come up with this genius plan of these co-ops, many of which have failed already. Co-op type insurers have failed already. This administration campaigned on change, and by God, there had better be some change. And on this bill, This is it. This is it. We've had Harry Reid for several years saying we've got to pick our battles. Well, Harry, this is the battle. This is the Armageddon. This is where you take a stand and do not fall back, not one inch. If there was ever a time in recent American political history, this is the time to put all the chips on the table, everything in, call their bluff, and go for it. Any shrinking violet in the Democratic Party who doesn't have the balls to go all out in this fight is no Democrat to me, is somebody that I would never, ever back again. I don't care who it is. If our president does not go balls to the wall on this, I will be sorely disappointed in him. If the Democrats don't pass this bill, come hell or high water, you know, I've always advertised this show as America's Democratic Liberal Radio Show. I will take the name Democratic off of it because I will be ashamed. Because we have the opportunity to pass these bills. We have the opportunity to use the rules to our advantage to override anything that the Republicans can do. We should use the nuclear option on the Republicans on a filibuster if they try and beat us on this. Whatever means are necessary should be used to pass this. And I want to tell you right now, President Obama and the Democratic leadership, if you don't rise up in righteous indignation against these Republicans on this health care bill and get something significant done for the American people, you are going to lose all of your political capital, and rightly so. Then we begin the search for somebody who does have the balls to come out and fight for what is right instead of play politics with the health of the American people. You know, I found an old quote today that it would be wise for the Obama administration to remember. And the quote is this: "The palace is not safe when the cottage is not happy." It's a quotation from Benjamin Disraeli. And perhaps those people that live in the palace should take heed of that. Because as sure as I'm sitting here, and the email I got, and the conversations I have with people, and what I hear from you, that if they don't do something meaningful, not just another one of these bills that yada, 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 don't want to see that. I want to see health care for all Americans. I want to see a public option. I want to see the insurance companies have some competition. They must fight to the political death on this issue. So, Harry Reid, what kind of guts do you have? I think a lot of you know that I'm not very optimistic about that. Nancy Pelosi, what kind of guts do you have? Both of them, and Obama, should be on television all day and all night, every day, lambasting anybody that tries to strike fear in the hearts of the elderly over this health care bill. They should stick it to them 24/7. Run one representative out after another, after another, after another. Political fortunes be damned. As I told one of the congressmen that was on our show not too long ago, wouldn't it be something if every time somebody went to take a vote, that they voted for what was right, instead of what meant something politically to them? Wouldn't that be something? Can you imagine every one of our elected representatives going in to cast his vote on every vote, and nothing more is in his mind than what's right for the American people? Not how should I vote so I can get more campaign contributions? Not how should I vote so I can get reelected and keep my job and keep my health care? But rather go in and pull the lever every time on your vote, having in your mind, I'm doing the right thing for the American people, for all of them, for the greater good. My God, I would pass out if I knew that all the elected representatives, it gives me goosebumps thinking about them walking in, you know, a Mr. Smith going to Washington type deal, and standing up and standing for what's right and voting for what's right instead of what's best for them for their reelection. We're going to have Congresswoman Allison Schwartz on the show in just a few minutes. We'll ask her some tough questions. I'm just tired of hearing from all the politicians that we're starting to hear. Now, they're starting to backpedal. A lot of the Democrats are starting to backpedal. Well, you know, it's an art of compromise, and we have to compromise with the Republicans. You don't have to compromise with the Republicans on this. You don't have to compromise with the Republicans on one damn thing right now. We have that much of a majority in the House. We have a foolproof majority in the Senate. And we can override any filibuster with a nuclear option. It's just whether or not anybody's got the balls to do it. We don't have to compromise. I understand that politics is the art of compromise, but there comes a time when you do not compromise anymore. There comes a time when you take a stand, you hold that ground, and you don't give it up. And if you move an inch, you've lost. And now is that time. We are neglecting people in Afghanistan and Iraq, troops right now over this issue, because this issue is at the forefront of everything in America now. Let's get this done. Let's do it right. Let's do what needs to be done and forget this fear-mongering like I just read you from that idiot Reagan and George H.W. Bush and Barry Goldwater and Bob Dole. Oh, we'll be telling our grandchildren and our children and grandchildren what it used to be like when America was free. That's their king, Ronald Reagan, saying that 40 years ago. I'll bet he didn't tell his children before he died that America, what America used to be like because of the failure of Medicare, because he didn't know what the hell he was talking about. That's why. He tried the fear-mongering then, and he was stupid. There's no other way to put it. He was stupid. What happened with Medicare is an unparalleled success. I will trust my fortunes to the government running a public health option. I most certainly will. And I'll bet you a dollar to a donut most everybody that's uninsured would as well. So don't fall for it. Fight it tooth and nail. Every time you hear it, every time you hear it from one of your friends' mouth, I don't care if you're sitting in a restaurant, I don't care if you're sitting someone having a beer, when someone brings up this idiocy of, oh, we'll all lose our health insurance if the Democrats have their way, tell them. Stop it right there. They look at you with eyes wide open and say, whoa. Tell them the truth. Tell them what Limbaugh's been telling them. Tell them what Laura Ingraham's been telling them, and Sean Hannity's been telling them, and Newt Gingrich has been telling them. Tell them Mark Levin and all those freaking idiots. Tell them they're full of crap. And tell them how it really is, because I know you know how it really is. I know you know what it is that should be in the public health care bill. Don't let it stand. I'll tell you what, I don't. I've challenged people, plenty of them lately, and they don't like it. But they're going to hear the truth. They can, well, I won't go there, but I won't stand for hearing it anymore. I don't care where I'm at. I don't care who I'm with. If I hear anybody telling these lies and these falsities about what it is we want in this health care program, I'm going to stop them right then and there and set them straight. And we all need to do that. Every single time. I've said my piece. How do you feel about it? I won't take any calls just right now because we are waiting on a call from Representative Allison Schwartz from the 13th District of Pennsylvania, including parts of Philadelphia. If you have a question that you would like put to her, please send me an email, guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com, and we'll try and get your questions in. I don't apologize for going on about this issue. It's something near and dear to my heart. I pick up the local newspaper and I read all the people in here that, oh, it's socialized medicine. I'm thinking, you know, you freaking idiot. I would love to talk to you face to face. The newspaper allows letters to the editor to be put in that are obscenely idiotic. But people that you read their letters and you understand that they don't know squat. We had a letter in our paper last night. This is a big newspaper. It's not the New York Times, but it's a big newspaper. Had a letter in there last night about all these illegal aliens getting Medicare and Social Security. That's bullshit. They don't get Social Security and Medicare. They don't get it. And yet, millions of people believe that that's the case. Millions of people believe that because of your Rush Limbaughs and your Hannitys and your Bill O'Reillys and your Glenn Becks and the rest of those idiots. So it's your job and it's my job to make it right every time you hear it. I don't care. I don't care whether it's a relative. I don't care if it's your best friend. Like I said, I don't care if you're standing in line at the Dairy Queen. If you hear somebody say that, turn around and get in their face. You don't have to be mean about it. Say, no, let me tell you, I heard what you said. Let me tell you the truth of the matter. Let me tell you that Medicare is an overwhelming success. Let me ask you if your parents are on Medicare and have done okay with it. Let me ask you if you want to give up your Medicare benefits. Huh? Let me ask you if you want to give up your Social Security check. Let me ask you, Mr. Veteran, do you want to give up your VA benefits? The answer is no, hell no, from every one of them. They need to be reminded. We need to kickstart that little argument once in a while. Like I said, you don't have to be mean about it, but you need to be stern about it. You need to be firm about it. And if they threaten to kick your ass, oh well. It's been kicked for a good reason. Oh my. I'm in a mood today. Our guest is a little late in calling today. They probably got a vote going on in the House. I should turn on the TV here in the studio and find out what's happening. I think what we're going to do, if you don't mind, what will we do, if you don't mind? I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll come back in just a minute. If our guest calls in the meantime, we will break in, okay?
Get you in a fight.
listening to The Guy James Show.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Carlton from Congresswoman Allison Schwartz's office.
Yes.
I just wanted to let you know that the congressman is actually on the floor voting right now. He's running a few minutes late. So as soon as she's done these votes in the next 5 minutes, she'll be calling in.
Okay, that'll be great. And when she calls in, we'll go live immediately, all right?
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for letting us know.
No problem. Bye now.
Bye now. Well, there you have it. See, that's how it goes. I figured she was on the floor doing a vote or two. Wonder what they're voting on right now. We'll ask her when she comes on. She will call. She's the most engaging lady. We've had her on the program before. You know, one of those Philly cheesesteak sandwiches sounds pretty good right now. Yeah. Little onion. Mm-hmm. That does sound good. I'll see if she can ship us a few of those. Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. I do want to let you know we are going to do something a little different today. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to have some noise around here coming up at 4 o'clock. So starting right then, right after the news, we're going to have a talk by Jonathan Alter about his book about Franklin Roosevelt, which I must tell you is a masterpiece. It is a masterpiece. And I think you'll enjoy hearing from him, if that all goes well, technically, anyway. I thought this was a hoot. I thought this was a real hoot. I got to tell you, I'm originally from Ohio, and I've always had respect for George Voinovich. He is a Republican, and he was the mayor of Cleveland, and I got a cold drink being brought into the studio by the executive producer. Oh man, yes. Now don't get excited. It's not booze. It's water with ice cubes. But the executive producer could tell I was getting a little dry, and the executive producer has the official Guy James Show Yorkies following her around. Is my wife Bess, by the way, is the executive producer, and Kukla and Sophie are right behind. Oh yes, you know it's amazing. Little dogs like that. I was gone for a while, and then she was gone for a while, and those little dogs, they miss their mommy or daddy when they're not around. And when they come home, they're just like, oh, boy, hello. You know how it is, you folks that have puppies. Anyway, they're looking good today, all three of them. Yeah, my wife just got in from Northwest Ohio last night. And I've mentioned to you before that she is... she's like purebred Greek, okay? And she lived in Greece for a while, and she speaks the language fluently. And so they had their Grecian festival where she was over the last week or so. And it's a big, huge festival in Northeast Ohio. And she brought home a shirt, says, I went, I ate, and or what was it? Come here and tell us. You got to come here and tell us what it said. Now you got to speak up here. What does this shirt say?
I came, I saw, I ate.
And just exactly what did you eat? What kind of Greek food did you have? You didn't have any calamari.
No, I had smelts.
Smelts.
Everybody loves smelts.
There was
a long line all the way around the.
For smelts.
Pastizo.
Yeah.
Moussaka.
Moussaka.
Stuffed tomatoes.
Ah, yes.
And Greek donuts.
How about the one that's my favorite, the tzatziki?
Tzatziki with the souvlaki.
So the souvlaki and the cheese that's on fire. What do they call that? You know, when they take that cheese and they light it up? Oh, it's good. Now, did you have any ouzo?
No, I had beer.
Now, how do you go to a Greek festival? Oh, they're asking on the do you have any leftovers, Bess?
No, I ate it all.
But you did ship something home, right? You bought some things you're shipping home.
Yes.
You had shipped home. So there'll be a care package arriving at today. So I want to thank our executive producer for dropping in on the show. All right. Yasu, she said. All right. Oopa! We went to a Yanni concert one time. We did, and I had to get into it. I yelled "Opa" all night long. Or Yasu Yanni. I guess Yanni's still out there doing it. Hey, Bess, what is a Greek donut? They're asking me what is a Greek donut. She's coming back out down the hall to the studio. She got to explain. See, now I got to tell you what I'll tell you what a Greek donut is, but she'll tell you first.
It's a deep fried dough, and then you put honey on the donut and cinnamon, and they're delicious.
Okay, all right. Well, there you go. Honey, deep fried dough, put honey on it, and then cinnamon, and they're delicious. And there's usually I've been to that festival, and there's usually a big long line at that outfit as well. So everybody's going yum. Now that you've ruined everybody on the chat room, they're all going yum. And one of them says, fried smelts. I don't know about the fried smelts. They like moussaka, too. Moussaka, Lotter J says, I make them all the time. But it says they sell those bedtime for Bonzo. He lives in Sweden, and he says they sell the Greek donuts there. He says there's about 10,000 calories per kilo. Yes. He said that's great. Try pouring good red wine on it. I wonder what you mean there. What would you pour on a moussaka? No. Okay. What are those grape leaves? What were they? Stuffed grape leaves. What's the Greek name for them? Of course I want to know. Come over here. What's the Greek name? See, so you folks will know what I'm faced with trying to learn Greek. I've given up. I know about six words. So what's the name of these stuffed grape leaves in Greek?
Yaprakia.
Yeah, yaprakia.
They're the same as a stuffed pepper, only they're grape leaves.
Okay, we got to go. We got to get rid of our producer now because I think the congresswoman's on the line. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, hello, it's Congresswoman Allison Schwartz calling.
Well, good afternoon, Congresswoman. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Terrific. Good to have you back on the program today. You were in doing some votes this afternoon. What were you voting on today?
Well, actually, it was a food safety bill that we voted on that actually didn't get enough votes, so then we had to vote on it again, and a number of other, we call them suspension bills, so they're not as big as the issue of healthcare, which we were all swirling around talking about, trying to get done.
It's the issue of the day. Now, I am, help me here, talk me out of this. I'm very pessimistic right now about the healthcare bill. Where are we at? Where do you think we're going with it?
Well, I think this is one of those moments where I think it's understandable for you to be a little bit concerned about whether we're going to get this done, but I can tell you this to reassure you, and I think you probably want us to get health care reform done, is that we're going to get this done. We have to. The American people, American businesses, our economic competitiveness, and the right thing to do for our people really requires us to finally tackle this issue. And it is complicated. A lot of different pieces of this legislation affects every one of us in this country. What I can say, the best thing I can say is that it is absolutely right that you would want every member of Congress to be deeply engaged in understanding what we've done and to try and make it work. And so that's the moment we're in. We're going to see it through the third committee that needs to pass it in order to get it to the floor. And then we're going to go back home to our districts and talk to our constituents and look to September to vote on it and reconcile the differences with the Senate and get it done.
Well, I'm not pessimistic that we will get a bill. I'm pessimistic that we will get the bill that we need. And I'm worried. I'm starting to hear talk that pretty much from Max Baucus that any public option is pretty much off the table. We're starting to hear more and more about co-ops, which we are not excited about. I'm concerned that we're going to have yet another bill that our political representatives can come home and say, well, we passed a bill. Well, I know we can pass a bill, but we should be able to pass the bill that we want with the margins that we have, should we not?
Well, I do believe we have enough votes to pass this bill. There is certainly an effort to bring on board as many Democrats as possible and to really be able to hear all the different parts of the caucus, and we are certainly a broad group of people in the sense of, you know, the spectrum we bring and opinions we bring. Let me say this. I agree with you that this bill and the reform that we implement as a result has got to assure the American people that we are containing costs going forward. We are making the kind of reforms that means people with insurance actually have meaningful insurance, and that we make insurance more affordable for American families. And that is, it's a lot of different moving parts, and I want to see a robust public option as one of the options. And I believe that a public option will be a part of the bill coming out of the House. As we define the public option, I want to make sure that it is fully functioning, can compete, and can help bring down costs and improve quality in the insurance that they provide and in the health care they provide. That's what I'm working on, and there will be a lot of details to be worked out even as this bill comes out of Energy and Commerce. We're not done yet. We're going to try, at least from my point of view, I'm going to tell you I'm part of the group that says we've got to do this right to the American people. I agree with you.
Well, I think you have to do it right. You know, I'm a Democrat, a lifelong yellow dog Democrat. I consider myself a liberal Democrat, and I think that you will. Let me just put it to you straight. I feel that we elected this administration on a couple of pillars, and this is one of them. And if this isn't done the way the constituency wants it done, I think that the Democrats are in huge trouble. Huge trouble. What do you think?
Well, I think it's very important for us to get health care reform done. I will say this, that what people, my constituents, others say, and it's hard to sort through all the rhetoric they hear. You know, there's no question about that. They hear some of the noise about, you know, what they think's going to happen or might not happen. The American people say that they want to keep my insurance. I want it to be meaningful. I want to be able to have pre-existing condition exclusions done away with, and we're going to do that. And we're going to make sure that they have opportunity to buy insurance should they be unemployed or, you know, in between jobs. That, you know, if they have to buy insurance as an individual, they're going to be able to go into a marketplace that makes it more affordable. We're going to continue a public-private system. Now, having said all that, does that mean that everybody's going to be absolutely happy with where we set aside to draw lines and how we do things? You know, probably not, but we are really trying to move this forward in a way that really meets those dual goals of making sure that people have access to meaningful health insurance. So we know we're going to get it right, I suppose, exactly right. I suppose the president might even say that, you know, but we're not going away. Congress is here. We will certainly make further reforms, but I want to make sure that this bill is meaningful for American families and that it provides the kind of health coverage that we all deserve and the kind of health care we deserve. And at the end of the day, that Americans are healthier as a result of this. And those are pretty big goals, and I want to pay for this bill. I think that we have that responsibility to be fiscally responsible. Not do what was done when we did a good thing, which was to extend prescription drug coverage to seniors, but didn't pay for it. $400 billion, you know, left to someone else to worry about later. That I don't think we should do. We have to pay for this bill. We have to do that in a fair way, too.
Well, I have a question from one of my listeners here, and you may find this one very interesting. And let me just read it to you. It came in by email. I am an expat living in Sweden since 1983. I'm now 55 years old and work as a medical translator. I've used the health care system here for several emergencies. Single-payer universal health care works wonderfully here. None of the things I've heard said about it from the Heritage Foundation and Rush, etc., are close to accurate and are gross distortions. The EU is very close to the U.S. in economic strength and ability to generate funds for social policies. What I want to know is whether Congress has had any fact-finding trips to the EU to study their health care programs, and if not, why? Scott from Stockholm.
Well, I guess what I would say is that we are looking certainly, I think many of us who have been involved in health policy for many years have looked at what's been done in other countries, but we've also looked at the way healthcare is provided in different states. You know, one of the closer models is what's gone on in Massachusetts as they sought to extend health coverage to all of their residents. So that I hope that the comments that she's made are very reassuring to anyone who is concerned about the public option, but we are not moving to a government-controlled and a single government system of health care. We are going to do something uniquely American, and that's going to be a mix of private and public options for people. They're going to keep private insurance. That makes it maybe in some ways more complicated, but Germany that has universal coverage uses private insurers as the payers. So there are a number of different models, even within the European Union, in the way they provide coverage. But I think that the Americans want choices, and they want, but they also want some assurances that they will be able to get coverage for their health services, and they don't always get that. That they won't have to be arguing with their insurance companies at the end of the day about coverage for services. So they want, and that they'll be able to afford to buy insurance when they're on their own, if they're on their own. So it's really, that's the kind of guarantees that I believe that we can make as part of the action that we're taking, is those sort of guarantees. We're not going to go to a single-payer system, not through this piece of legislation.
Have there been any, to follow up on that question, have there been any fact-finding missions to the EU by members of Congress?
I can't speak to that exactly. I don't know what everybody else's travel schedule is. I can tell you that I have had an experience not as a member of Congress, but went to had the opportunity to go to France a number of years ago, and the intention was to study child care and the way they provide child care. But part of that was the way they provide health services for children and the women in prenatal care. And it was pretty interesting, and it really was informative to just know. I think the most impressive part of it was that you talked to parents who didn't worry about whether they would be able to get the health care for their children that they needed. And that kind of assurance, that kind of commitment that all everyone made to each other on behalf of each other's families was really quite impressive.
I live in South Florida, and we get many, many, many visitors from our good neighbors to the north from Canada. And I have an opportunity to talk to many of them every week. And they are, for the most part, I would say 90-some-odd% happy with their health care system, and just are fascinated that we don't copy their system. In fact, I think it was designed by a gentleman by the name of Douglas, if I'm not mistaken, and yesterday or the day before, they voted him the most popular Canadian in history. So, you know, I don't know. We look at
What I can tell you this, though, as well, is that I have both spoken to and traveled to visit a variety of different ways that we provide health coverage in this and health care in our own country, from big university settings that have improved the quality of care and the cost of care in Denver to more rural Pennsylvania, the Geisinger Health System, and the way they provide health services to a more rural population that they believe is more cost-effective and better quality and better outcomes for people in that area. So what we're trying to learn from is both the best way to pay for and the best way to deliver health care that improves access, improves quality of the services, and actually saves money for all of us. We certainly are using all of that information to inform us as we make some of these changes. You know, for example, I've been a very active advocate for making sure that we incentivize primary care. We don't have enough primary care physicians and nurses in this country. We don't pay them as much as we pay specialists. We don't encourage them or pay them to help coordinate care for their sick patients with chronic diseases. We don't really make it easy for patients just discharged from the hospital to be able to be back in touch with a nurse or a doctor to make sure that they don't have to be readmitted to the hospital because of care of a wound or compliance with medication or other kinds of treatment post-hospitalization. These are lessons we can learn that we know makes a very big difference in improving the quality of care, improving the outcome for patients, and saving all of us money. That's the kind of effort made. All of those kinds of improvements are in this legislation as well.
I want to know how anybody thinks that the private insurance companies are going to go along with anything that we do to try and save money. After all, they're in it for profit. You are not going to get them to cooperate in any way, shape, or form if we don't give them some competition with a public health care plan that actually competes against them. How in the world can we expect these fat cats that draw these monster salaries to cooperate in any way to save the American people? Because they've shown no inclination whatsoever to do that in their history. They've shown no inclination to do that. What makes anybody in Washington think that they're going to do it now?
Well, I can't speak for other folks, but I can speak for myself, and that is that I believe that there ought to be a strong, robust public option that creates competition and moves to these quality models and helps create the kind of competition that moves the insurance industry. I would not rely on the insurance industry to do this alone, and that is not what their incentive has been. I apologize, I need to leave to have a meeting with the speaker on health care. So we're going to keep moving
right
along, and I'm going to keep trying to see if we can get this right. It is a challenge and a balance, but, you know, I know, I hear the goals that you have in mind, and I hope that we can.
Congressman, thanks so much for being on.
We can accommodate everybody.
You got to get
all
this
right,
one
very
right.
Good. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Anybody know how to dance? A little dance in there. That's what I'm hearing from everybody in Washington right now. Dance, dance, dance. And God damn it, I don't like it. They just won't come out and say it, will they? They just won't come out and say it. Oh, well. Hey, we're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, because of what we explained a little earlier, we're going to go to some audio that I think you will enjoy because of noise that's going to be around the studio here today, and we'll come back in just, very, very shortly.